Living my best life.
Wait, say that again. You made a castle on your Animal Crossing?
I did. I put my house and my daughter's house next to each other.
How fucking adorable.
And then I used silos and wall panels and wedding organs to give the facade of a castle.
Oh, you're so good at Animal Crossing.
Thank you. That was on my old island that I deleted, so I don't have a castle now. Now I do have just like a beachside bungalow.
Wow.
I decided to simplify.
I brought up to my girlfriend Jen that you did that, and she was mortified.
I don't regret it.
She would never give up what she has made.
I got to a point where I was disenchanted, and I wanted that new island high back.
Right, the possibilities.
Yeah, like who's going to move onto my island and what's my fruit going to be? Like I needed something.
Yeah.
I needed something to look forward to because I was getting to the point where I was like, all right, so now I just have to do like my daily checklist because my island is everything I want it to be. So when I redid it, I decided to more embrace the natural landscape rather than doing so much terraforming.
I love it.
And I made it a simpler island.
Yeah.
What?
Well, you can't terraform in the beginning, right? So you kind of have to go with what nature gives you.
Yeah. But I decided that because my last island, once terraforming opened up, I basically leveled the whole thing and then just made my own kind of terrain. And this time I was like, no, we'll do limited terraforming for the sake of placing bridges and stuff, but you're going to keep the natural landscape.
I think what they should do is I just started playing a couple months ago, so I haven't fully made my island. I'm getting there.
That's how you're supposed to play.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be obsessive. A little bit every day. Yeah.
I'm at the point now where I'm spending a good, I'm having more fun now because I'm spending a good amount of time making the rooms in my house and kind of coming up with my aesthetic.
Yeah.
Whereas I think there was a middle period after the beginning where every day I basically had a month where every day was a new bridge or incline.
Yeah.
So every day was get a new bridge or incline, or get the kit for it, and then spend all day catching butterflies and fucking bullshit, and then trying to pay off that bridge, and that got repetitive. Mm-hmm. So yep. I'm glad now I'm in a place of more style.
Where you get to really, there's nothing to be good at. It's all about just
I think you're
making it what you want to be.
No, I think good at it is when people are creative and they take a thing that wasn't supposed to be that thing. And like you made a castle by putting two houses together and using these other, thinking outside of the box like that is what I really like.
I get a lot of inspiration from other people. I go on YouTube and I'll look at other people's cool islands and I'm like, that's I want to do that.
Sure.
But it's definitely, it's certainly a outlet for me. It's I have this little piece of life that I can control and make pretty in the way that I want it.
Yeah.
I can go sit by the, occasionally I'll just sit my character down by a waterfall and just sit there and hang out. It's peaceful.
I love playing at night. I love playing at night.
That chill jazz music.
Yeah. I love to I'll turn out all the lights in my room and light a candle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I was into this last season, but I've gotten big into scented candles. I'm living that scented candle life.
That makes me so happy.
I love scented candles. And so I'll light a scented candle, I'll turn the lights out, and I'll just be on my island at night. And I just nooks, crannies closed. And so it's like the Able sisters are closed. So it's just there's less to do.
Yeah, it's
So
just a
you're just
nice, peaceful
chilling.
atmosphere. You chill in. If you want to fish, you can fish. There might, you might catch shooting star if you see,
Yeah.
It's so peaceful. I one of my favorite ways to unwind is I will set up like a nice bath for myself, get some candles around. I have like a thing that I use as a bath tray, and I sit and I'll play my Switch in the bathtub and
Yeah.
just mellow out.
Yeah. Well, this is a great segue into today's topic. But first, let's say this is Cuckoo Bananas.
Sure
Welcome.
is.
We're in season two. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined by the luminous Kate Ganey.
Oh, thank you.
And me and Kate are, we're swell people, but we're not licensed therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, or anything that I like. We're not healthcare professionals. Please do not use this podcast as a form of healthcare. If you really need help, please seek out medical attention. If you are feeling like hurting yourself, please look at the notes of this podcast. The suicide prevention hotline is always there. And welcome, and we're gonna have some fun. Today we're talking about internet and technology addiction. And it's interesting that we started with Animal Crossing, because I actually think I'm not addicted to Animal Crossing.
I'm not now, but boy, howdy, was
Were you?
I?
Wow. See, because I
Oh.
was going to say, I've definitely been addicted to video games for sure. But this video game, I feel like Animal Crossing, you need to play it every day. But I also feel like you get to a point. You get to a point where it's like, you did it. You hit every rock. You
I'm
took
done
every
for the day.
tree.
Yeah.
You saw what the Evil Sisters got today. You saw which one of your, you talked to all your villagers and got the DIY for whichever villager is doing something. You did all the things you have to do every day. And that's why, like, I like when you save, it says, hey, you're done for, you wrap, you want to wrap up for now?
Yep, you good for now?
Right. So I'm so interested. Tell me about your addiction to it, because I'm not.
So very like when it first came out, it was right after, quarantine began. I had been completely isolated for like 2, 3 weeks at that
Sure.
point. And I was very much looking forward to Animal Crossing. So I didn't play the earlier games. I've never been much of a gamer. I didn't have those systems or anything. I never had a DS. I never had a Game
Yeah.
Boy. So this was my first Animal Crossing experience, and I was really excited for it. I started hearing about it, and I was like, that's a video game I can get behind. And
Yeah.
as soon as I got it, I truly became obsessed. If you look at my like stats on it, it'll say that I've played for over like 100,000 hours or something
Wow.
absurd. And like I've bounced back and forth. So I have done time traveling. So I think that does affect like my play time. I'm not positive.
Yeah.
But during the beginning of quarantine, I basically played all day, just to the point where I would like set a task for myself and be like, okay, I'll stop when this is done. And then I'd be like, oh no, but now I want to do this. Now that made me think of this. And then I would just keep going. And before I knew it, I'd look at the clock and it'd be like 11 o'clock at night. And I'd be like, oh, you've literally
Wow.
been in the same seat all day.
Wow. See, I feel like there's a point where I'm done and I'm like, I have to wait until 5 a.m. because I need to refresh my island.
I need to see what's new tomorrow.
Right. Because, like, I feel like there's a point where it's like, I even want to play more.
Well, the time travel was a slippery slope with that because when you time travel in the game,
And yeah.
you are going to the next day and whatever. So I would play 10 days in a day and just keep going. And it was bad for a while.
Wow.
It's certainly gotten to a much different point.
Right.
Like you said, like now it has those little daily tasks that I do. And I'm like, okay, I'm done now. But I did certainly get obsessive and addicted at the beginning. I lost my mind because my daughter ate my turnips by accident.
Wow, okay.
Yeah,
Wow.
it
You know what? Let's say right here at the beginning that the term addiction is a precarious one, and there's a lot of argument, even in the world of psychology, which again, me and Kate are not in that world, but in the world of psychology, there's a lot of arguments over what is addiction. And the DSM changes from time to time. Some people say you can't be addicted to things like gambling or sex or marijuana or whatever. I think you can. I've talked before on the show how I was addicted to marijuana. I know some people smoke marijuana all the time and they are fine, but for me, it was bad. And so I would say that was addiction. I do know that there are some creeps out there who, when they get Me Too'd, they come out and say that they're sex addicts as a way of deflecting responsibility. So them aside, I do think that someone could be addicted to sex. I think that a human being can be addicted to any crutch. And
100%.
In our conversation today, I want to think of addiction by its sort of most old and standard definition, which is it gets in the way of your life's functioning. You know, you can play video games all the time. You play it every day. But if video games are getting in the way of your relationship or getting in your way of feeding yourself or getting in the way of work, then that's the definition of an addiction.
Yeah, if it's getting in the way or if it's a detriment to your life in some way.
Right, right. And I'm not addicted to Animal Crossing, but I think, I don't know. You know, I might not, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know if I'm addicted to video games. Oh, I mean, it's gotten in my... I've never, like, missed work because of it. But I've gotten... It's gotten in the way of my life of knowing I should go to sleep. And then spending 5 more hours playing Doom Eternal. And closing my eyes and, like, playing the game in my brain. Because it's like I'm still in the rhythms of it.
All the time. I see games or whatever I've been staring at all day on the inside of my eyelids when I'm trying to sleep. And I'm like, this isn't right.
Right.
This is not how it should be when you're laying down to rest. You should be like unpacking your brain instead of just seeing a stream of more technology.
But you know, let's move on from video games, because let's talk about the big one, which is phones.
Oh boy.
Smartphones. So fucking, I could say I'm addicted to my smartphone. It's with me right now.
100%.
Always close. I've never like, sometimes my mom will like leave hers at home by mistake. And it's like, that is so not, I've never done it. It doesn't even seem possible.
No, that gives me a panic attack just thinking about it.
I know.
Imagine. I mean, I think I was addicted to the computer before I was even addicted to my smartphone. I wanted to be on MySpace and I wanted to be on AIM and all of that stuff. Yeah, like I was that kid. Like I got home from school and I went right to my computer. But I was always addicted to the social aspects of it, always, and still am. It's the interacting with other people. It's not so much gaming or, you know, going on like these websites and reading articles and whatever. It's almost always exclusively been for socialization and the need to feel connected. That's where my addiction comes from. It comes from the need for connection and validation.
And that's not, well, validation is its own topic. Whoa. But connection is a good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very hard to be value judgy about things, because it's like, you know, what if you live, you know, like, what if I am the only gay person in a small town that's not very accepting of me? I could find a whole community online of people like me and where I couldn't have had that before.
Yeah.
Or you know, I want to know when the fucking toaster was invented. I could find it right fucking now. All the information that's ever been created, I have at my fingertips now. So there's something magical about that, right?
Yeah. And now it's in our pockets.
Right. But then
we used to have to wait to get home and sit down in a chair and do it or whatever. But now it's like
library.
Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. There is, even with the social aspect, there's the validation thing. There's the buzz of I've got an email, or I've got a check. I've got someone, you know, somebody has hearted one of my things on Instagram. Somebody has, you know, that's the drug of it, I think.
For sure.
Have you ever had a situation where you did leave your phone in like another room? You're like, I need a little phone break, and you leave it in the other room, but you're expecting to come back to it, and like you've got tons of messages and stuff, and you come back and you don't, and you're like, oh,
yep.
Where's that buzz that I want?
Yep. And then it makes you think about how many notifications you would have received had you been holding your phone, and it would have been the same thing. So how would I have spent that time? And it's just such a dangerous trap, I feel like, because we do always have our phones with us. We are always scrolling or expecting notifications or checking up to see if somebody liked this post we made or this comment we made, or if somebody responded, or we're always checking for something.
Well, you've got to put into it to get out of it too. Like, you've got to be posting things to be getting likes.
100%,
you won't get any notifications if you're not putting into the system.
Yeah, it's addictive by design, because, absolutely, you know, The, and it's so accessible. It's right there. There's nobody telling you put that down now. There's no there's no limit. You're free to engage with your technology in whatever way you want, as
Right.
ever, however often as you'd like. So it's very hard to check yourself on that because there is no, external force saying time to stop or whatever. There's nothing.
Yeah. No,
There's
God, no. If anything, the external force is going, keep going.
Yeah,
Keep going.
I set the timers on my phone at your suggestion. I set screen timers, and I can't tell you how often I was like, dismiss,
Ignore. Yeah.
dismiss.
Oh, yeah.
It's so easy. Who's gonna
It
stop me
doesn't
from
shame me.
dismissing the timer? Okay, bye.
I know.
Like,
Yeah, I like you could put on your phone like timers of how much time you allow yourself on social media or any app. But yeah, I just ignore it all the time. And all it does is add a level of it makes me aware, I guess, of how much I'm looking, but it adds a level of shame, which I don't know if that's good or bad in this.
Yeah. I don't know if this is helping me necessarily.
But I honestly can't remember the last time I saw it say, your daily limit is up, and been like, oh, okay, like no fucking way.
I'll tell you when my limit's up.
Don't tell me, phone. I tell you, I own you.
Oh, okay, phone. Like you have a consciousness.
Sometimes I want to argue with the phone. I'm like, yeah, but listen, phone. I know that I'm about to hit my YouTube limit. But I was listening to a podcast on
It was
YouTube.
about
It
my
doesn't
growth.
count. Like I wasn't watching videos. Like I feel like you're like going hard on me right now, and you really should like let it fucking.
Ease up. It was for my growth. If you could just do me a favor and ease the fuck up.
But I mean, doesn't that imply addiction that we feel such little control that we try to put controls on it and then ignore those
And
controls?
then I'm like,
Nah. Right.
I don't want, I hesitate to say this, but I do think that I have gotten better about that kind of addiction with
Okay.
age. I think I've gotten to a place where I do value those social media breaks. Like, I won't take them for myself because I'm addicted and I don't have that control. But I do kind of breathe a sigh of relief when I go somewhere and I don't have service. Like, I went on a
Right,
trip
right.
last week, and in a lot of places, I didn't have service. I was out in nature and there
Yeah.
was no cell phone towers. And I was like, this is a relief. I didn't feel, I, of course, once I came into service, I was curious about whatever notifications I had and stuff, but I kind of like relished the moments where I didn't have service and I couldn't default to scrolling Facebook or
Right.
something like that because that's what I'll do. I will mindlessly open the app before I ever even think about it and I'm
Right.
scrolling. I didn't even notice I picked up my phone and I'm scrolling and
Right.
I'm often taking in negativity
Oh, but it's
and
bullshit.
darkness and
Yeah.
whatever. So it can certainly be a detriment to my well-being. 100%. There is obviously good that comes with it too.
Yeah.
Like you said, you're able to make these connections with people that you might otherwise not meet or
Right.
interact with, where you physically are.
But I agree with
There are.
you. I've had situations too where if I'm in a place where I don't have connectivity, I do breathe a sigh of relief. And
Yeah.
it's like, well, if that's true, why don't I just fucking do it? Why don't I just, I've threatened to do it. I've threatened to do it. I've even gone as far as taking social media apps off my phone and saying, you know what? I'm old, so I use Facebook. I'm taking Facebook off my phone. I'm taking Instagram off my phone. I'm taking TikTok off my phone. I'll only look at them on a computer. And that'll last a day. And then I'll go right back.
Yep.
And when you
Same.
go back, you feel that powerlessness of like, oh, I don't have control of this at all. But I do breathe that sigh of relief. It's like,
It also really helps me that I have a partner who isn't on social media at all.
those people I admire.
No interest, no interest, never got into it, no interest.
Wow.
Like, just doesn't care for it at all.
I was
Has a
hooked to
phone, uses
MySpace.
it for other stuff. Like, it
Yeah.
blows my mind. I'm like, what do you do?
But what
Like,
about YouTube? Does he watch a lot of YouTube?
yes, but not in an addictive kind of way. Like, he's got a couple games on his phone. Like, I just do, it, he doesn't use his phone in that way, and it blows
Wow.
my mind. He's a big sports person,
Yeah.
so that's a lot of it is he's doing fantasy sports on there, and there's notifications about this team and
Yeah,
that,
yeah,
and
yeah.
he's reading, about trades and whatever. But it's not a social thing at all for him. His phone
Wow.
is a tool. It's not a social thing at all,
Wow.
and I'm like astounded by it. Like he's a text. You know, like, and he's got messages with his friends and stuff, and he uses his phone to communicate with people, but it's not this, like,
Yeah.
you know, socialization tool, where for me, that's its primary function.
I would have to say, for me, it's not its primary function, but I'm still super addicted to it. I'm addicted to consuming content. Like, I know Instagram is technically a social network, but it's scrolling through my discovery page and looking at, you know,
videos
I also follow
and,
a lot of artists and stuff. So it's like, I like looking at art. I like looking at stuff. So there's a lot of consumption. Like, same thing with YouTube. Like, I'm subscribed to a lot of channels on YouTube, and a lot of these people have like regular videos, and it's like, okay, I'll get a notification. Oh, they've got a new video. It's 20 minutes. Let me watch that.
See, that's too daunting for me. I don't know if that's an attention span thing, but like with my YouTube notifications, I have the things that I follow, and I get those notifications, and I'm very overwhelmed by them. And I'm like, nope, can't do that. And then I distract myself by scrolling on something else for 20 minutes. So I could have watched that video that I might've learned something from, but it's just this inclination toward the socialization of it.
Yeah. What would you do? TikTok?
Okay, so I downloaded TikTok at the beginning of quarantine, so about a year ago, and I've made like a handful of them, and I'm not on it that often, but I do enjoy it because it's a quicker digestion of media. Like it's
right. Good. That's what makes
for
it so addictive.
My ADD. Yeah, like it's like, oh, here are these little shots of,
yes.
And it's all
serotonin.
Different things. I mean, I follow people that are dancers. I follow people that are doctors. I follow, you know, so it's all these little, it's a variety. So I do like TikTok for that, but I'm also like, I get worried that like doing things that cater to my short attention span are like setting me further behind, that I'm like, no, just like, why don't you just sit and watch the 20-minute video? But I know I'm not going to, because I know I'm going to be looking at my phone and I get the notification that a YouTube user I subscribe to has posted a 20-minute video, right? I'm going to look at my phone and I'm going to go, I don't have time for that. And if I do decide that I have time for it, I am going to then cast it to my TV so I can still use my phone while I'm watching it.
Sure,
and
okay.
I'm not going to really be paying attention to the video.
When I watch a 20-minute video, it's not like I watch it all the way through. I will stop and then scroll and then go back to it.
Yeah. I can't. If I stop, I'm not going to watch it. Yeah. I'm not going to go back.
Yeah. I also, like, I guess a lot of people, well, we're not the same age. I'm older than you. But a lot of people don't, a lot of people downloaded it at the beginning of the pandemic, which I did as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I find TikTok so addictive. And it's because it is so easily consumable. And just with a swipe of your thumb, you're getting a new thing. So it's like new thing, shot of serotonin, shot of serotonin, shot of serotonin. Okay, this one's bad. The next one will be good. Okay, it's like blackjack. Like, hit me. And it's so easy. Sometimes I'd be like, oh, I should go to bed. I'll just look at 5 more TikToks. Oh, no, those weren't good. Okay, let me look at 5 more. And just boom, boom. And then really, I mean, I could.
And then now it's been an hour.
Really, I could really lose time on TikTok. Like, really. And really not getting enriched at all. Not get any news, not get any real art, not get any real like TikTok. I mean, there's good stuff on TikTok, but you can easily just get nothing. And also TikTok has a lot of rage porn.
Yeah.
A lot of here's a video of some, you know, boomer lady yelling at somebody and for you to get indignant over. Or here's somebody in a Walmart not wearing their mask to get indignant over. And it's like, and there's an algorithm. So the more you watch those, the more they give it to you. So it's like sometimes you get into the rage porn.
Yeah. And you get on the ugly side.
And it's like, why am I angry at this person? This is an isolated incident happening in some other state. Why am I furious now over this ignorant person?
And like, it's understandable why you're furious, because you're seeing someone being ugly. But like, you don't. It's so hard, because it's hard to find that balance between like, yes, I need to see these things because I need to know that they exist in the world and I can't live in my privileged bubble, but also I cannot feed myself anger nonstop.
Right.
Like, watch something about this, but in a proactive way. Like, and it's so hard to find that because on social media, it's all rage porn from one direction or the other. It's get really mad at this person, get really mad at this person, not here's what these people will both agree on and here's what we can do together.
Right.
It's so much easier to fall into a trap of anger where you're just watching people be ugly and it becomes so disheartening. There was a point point during quarantine, and I believe everybody was going through this point at the same time. You could just feel it in the air, as all these things were being exposed to people who had never noticed them before. You know, just the heaviness of all the ugly things in the world, and all the hate and all the division, like, just came to the forefront, I think, in a way that it hadn't before, because, and it needed to happen. The world needed to be quiet and shut up and listen to the absolutely horrendous things that happen. I maintain that. I maintain that there's a cosmic reason that all the sports stopped, all the distractions stopped. And it's a, and we were told, listen and pay attention to this. Take care of each other, please, because people are dying for no good reason. Not that there's ever a good reason for people to die. Anyway, but it's that constant feed of pain and injustice, and it's very easy to get sucked into that.
Right. And I think it leads to the cancel culture problem, because I could see a 10-second video of some woman, and I'll say women, not because women are doing it more, but I think women are captured more and vilified more. Find some woman that they'll call a Karen being mean to somebody and hate her, and it's like her mother could have just died.
Yep.
She could have just been diagnosed with cancer. Yeah. This is a snapshot of a human being at their worst, and now I'm defining them by their worst. And some of these people lose their lives because everyone sees it. They lose their jobs, and it's like, I'm sorry. You know, it's one thing when we cancel celebrities if they've got a lot of money and they could live. You canceling a normal person, they're going to become homeless. They're going to get PTSD. And also,
like, maybe this person is hideous. Maybe this person has a hideous soul, and this is how they conduct themselves every single day. Maybe you don't get to decide that, because you're only seeing this one ugly snapshot of them. And B, that's not what you need constant exposure to.
Right.
And we have people have to deal with enough pain and drama and negativity in their own lives. We come to these social networks and whatever to escape a little bit. And yes, sometimes you do need to be exposed to that. Like I said, you can't live in your privilege bubble and think that people like that don't exist.
Right.
But it's dangerous, because there are so many people who seek that out.
Yes. Well, because it does give you a little through. You get an indignation boner.
You feel you're like, look how much better I am than that person, too. Right. On some level, your ego is kind of being fed by the fact, like, I would never do this.
Yeah. I think it gives you mean world syndrome. Not to get too, like, communications degree on you, but, like, mean, if you don't know, listener, like, mean world syndrome comes from a media theorist named George Gerbner, and he studied violence in the media, specifically TV, for like 20 years, and because he wanted to prove the point of, can violent media make you act more violently, which is what a lot of times conservatives say. They'll say, like, oh, violent video games will make kids act violently. But what George Gerbner found was not that. He found that consuming violent media simply made you think the world was more violent. It made you more afraid of violence happening to you, which is why he called it mean world syndrome. It gives you a misdefinition of the world. And I think a lot of this gives you mean world syndrome, you know, because guess what? Most people are wearing their fucking masks. Most people are getting their vaccine. Most people aren't hideous.
Most people are kind.
Yeah.
And it's really true. And it's so easy to think that they're not.
Right. Right. Because it's you know, a TikTok of somebody just being cool is not a TikTok. A TikTok of somebody being an asshole is a TikTok. So you'll just see 10 of them in a row and think, wow, this world sucks. I hate this world.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, actually, this world's awesome.
Yep. Crime, you're just on the wrong side of social media right now. And it's easy to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because I think, and I think the technology knows this, getting engaged emotionally creates the addiction. If you can get that little jolt of whatever it is, you know, for some people, it's like cuteness. And, you know, their feed becomes all full of little, like, dog videos. And that's great, too. Some people, it's the anger boners, and it's all videos of people acting like dicks. Whatever it is you can get emotionally invested in, the system, the algorithms, and the technology knows to feed that to you, and therefore you're stuck with it.
Yeah, and it's for a million reasons. The internet is a very beautiful and dangerous thing, but it gives every person a platform. So somebody who is negative and mean and, you know, just a mean-spirited person, who otherwise in day-to-day life would be dismissed or disregarded or whatever, now has this platform where no one can stop them from putting whatever this is out there. whatever it is, it's nobody's gonna make, you know, no one's gonna be standing in front of them awkwardly and it's gonna make them uncomfortable and they're gonna shut up. They have this outlet where they can sit and do nothing but type or speak or whatever and broadcast their innermost thoughts and whatever. Right. And sometimes they're completely unhealthy, you know.
Right.
And they are going to send out a signal to other people who feel that way. And they're not the only one. So while the world isn't entirely, exactly, the world isn't entirely negative,
right?
You know, but there are enough people that if you put out this, you know, if you send up the signal, they're going to respond and congregate.
Because everyone thought they were alone with their evil thoughts. I mean, look, we've had over the last 15 years a surge of white supremacy. We've got Nazis back. And it's because these people that would have these terrible thoughts, instead of hiding them, put them out, and then other people somewhere in the country or the world see it. I mean, it radicalizes people in every way. I mean, I see it even like, I talk about this on my other podcast, Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC, available anywhere podcasts are found. I talk about this on my other podcast about how like sometimes fandom becomes toxic. Like there's a whole section of Star Wars fandom that's just like really gross and toxic.
So
and like,
ugly.
Will like, you know, bully female actresses on Twitter because they don't like them or, the female Ghostbusters movie from 2016, I think is still, the trailer to that is still the most downvoted video in YouTube history because they're Lady Ghostbusters. So like it could radicalize anything.
Oh, yep. Yep. And you know, if you're able to broadcast something, whatever feeling that is, whether it's an ugly feeling, a positive feeling, whatever it is, you're broadcasting that out to the world or some section of the world, and people will be drawn to it. Whatever, you know, people will come to it in some way. And it's, it can be very dangerous. And the way that it feeds into addiction, I think, in my case, is finding people who think the way I do and stuff like that. And it becomes very validating. Something that I really try to do and to do it in a way that's not a detriment to my sanity is to not make my social media an echo chamber. To not make it all people who think like me and have the same interests as me, but also not make it a space that like is constantly triggering me. You know, like I
don't. That's a hard line. That's a hard line because you don't want to be triggered, but also if you remove anything that bothers you, you create an information bubble, which is why you have. You know, there are people right now in the country. Who think there are people right now in the world that think the world is flat in the 21st century. And it's because they've created crazy information bubbles or like QAnon. Mm-hmm. The QAnon people think like any amount of crazy things that, you know, Trump is still the president.
They're the only people who know the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. The Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton are pedophiles and like all sorts of crazy shit. And it's because they've congregated together. I know it's that's a hard thing to do though, because like you don't want to be bothered, but also I mean I see it the other way too. I remember when Trump was elected, so many of my liberal-minded friends were so shocked, and not to say like I'm so smart because I'm not, but I remember being like, guys, it shouldn't be shocking to you. It's only shocking to you because you supported Bernie or Hillary.
Right.
Your friends did. And so you thought it's not possible for Trump to win. Yeah. But guess what? A lot of people do like Trump. You just aren't engaging with them.
Yep. And I mean, Trump is a caricature of America. it's just like if you were creating a character that embodied, you know, the negative attributes of America.
Yeah.
That's what you'd have. So it's natural that things were put out into the social media sphere and stuff like that, that painted him in a light that made him all American. And it was very easy for people to fall into that trap. It's social media has had such a hand in like the political outcomes of the last, I guess, like 10 years or so, where it's really become like more of a tool for campaigning and stuff like that. And I think that's another place that social media got addictive over the last few years is the political feuding. People became addicted to that in a very negative way, where, you know, you have people that were posting comments like just for like the flame war or whatever. Wait, that just wanted to go.
Do you ever fight with people online?
No.
Neither do I, because I don't like confrontation and it doesn't excite me. But I know some people, I have friends that they love it. They'll go online and they and these people sometimes they're not an echo chamber. They actually surround themselves with people that they know disagree with them so they can have combatants.
Yeah.
And I know people that go online and will say the most like even things I agree with, but they say it in the most glib, insulting way of like, if you voted for Trump, then you're a fucking idiot or whatever.
Right,
just inviting the vibe, just inviting them, and they thrive on it. And I can't.
Yeah, no, it's I can't do that. I mean, there was a time where not that I would post to argue or anything, but there was a time a few years ago where I would share more intimate or passionate thoughts and feelings about politics and stuff like that. And then it got to a point where I was arguing too much and I just stopped sharing that stuff. I still talk to my friends and family about that stuff when I'm around them, but I don't post it on social media anymore because I have a wide social media network because I have like a lot of online groups that I'm a part of and whatever. And I don't always want to engage with all of those people because I know that sometimes it's completely pointless, you know, but I think there are a lot of people who got addicted to that, either to like the savior complex of like, I'm out here fighting the good fight on the internet.
Right.
Or, you know, like, I think there are people who are addicted to asserting their point on the internet.
Sure. Well, this is good. We've slipped a little bit into the negative effects of social media on the public, but let's bring it back to more personal things. Is there a time at night that you turn off your phone? Not turn it off, because that's impossible. That's like cutting off your fingers. But is there a time is there a time at night where you shut it down? Is there
on my more healthy days, I put my phone like in my night table. I put it on the charger and close it in the drawer. Like when I lay down to bed.
Yeah.
Whatever time that is. That's not always a set time. It's whenever I end up, you know, falling asleep. And but most of the time I would say no. I have a very unhealthy relationship with my phone where I will hold it in my hands until I fall asleep.
If I hold it in my hands, I'm going to be awake for 72 hours. I cannot fall asleep. So I have to do it. So I do have to have a point where I do. And then like I'll either, if I'm really tired, I'll just go to sleep. But if not, I'll like read on my Kindle, which is also technology, but it doesn't glare. It doesn't have that eye glare that kills you.
And it's reading, so you can feel better about it.
Right. I just have to make sure that I don't read a page, then look at Instagram, then read another page on Instagram, because I could do that sometimes too.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that was really fucking me was I would have it on. We sleep with our phones. We're so intimate with our phones. My phone is next to my pillow, like my lover. So, I would, you know, wake up at 3 a.m. to take a pee or maybe get a glass of water. And I was really screwing myself up because for a long time, I'd be like, well, let me just look for a second. And now it's 4:30. I've been awake for an hour and a half in the middle of the night. Do I go back to bed?
I've accomplished nothing.
I've completely fucked up my sleep cycle.
I've screwed up my sleep royally. I've done nothing of value.
That's the hardest thing that I still struggle with, because it's like, you know, I mean, part of you wants to see the time, and you know, like if you have a partner or somebody, you maybe you want to see if they were trying to contact you. But like if you see like an Instagram notification, it's like, that's not going to be important. I don't need to fucking look at that. And then you fucking do it. Then
and now you're scrolling.
Or God forbid, and I do this too. God forbid I say I'm going to look at TikTok for a minute. Nope.
That's not something you can look at for
3 weeks later. Cut to.
Yeah, no, I used to do the same thing where I would wake up in the middle of the night and grab for my phone. I read something regarding like intimacy, and this really only applies if you sleep with your partner. But it was talking about how we all wake up and the first thing we turn and look at is our phones. I have tried to not do that. So, you know, I sleep in my bed, my night table is on one side and my partner is on the other. So when I wake up, if I have enough time to consciously make that choice, I'm trying to get to the point where it's just my instinct. But I try to turn and face my partner first
Wow.
and give my partner a kiss or
Right.
touch him or something instead of immediately the moment I wake up turning to my technology.
Wow. You just blew my fucking mind by saying the first thing we look at is our phone or look to, because you're, that is right. I wake up and my eyes go to my phone. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's the first thing
Holy
we
shit.
all do. And it's under, I think it's for a lot of us who existed in the time before cell phones too. I think we have a thing about knowing what time it is. Yeah,
Sure.
I think there's something about the fact that we all grew up with that cable box that,
Right,
had
yeah.
those that red number that told us the time from across the room or whatever.
Right.
Like, I think we want that, so we're
Yeah,
looking for the
especially if you
time.
like if you're working and you like you do that quick math of how much more sleep you got and you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do think there's that's largely a reason, but that like shook me too the first time I saw that. Like, yeah, the second I wake up, I'm turning to the side where my phone is,
Yeah.
and I'm looking at that when the people I love the most, my children, my partner,
Right.
are the other way, or literally, if I just turn my head the other way, that's where they are. Why am I turning toward my technology? Like, wake
Wow,
up
yeah.
grounded in the moment, at least for the first 5 seconds of your day. Try
Right.
to be in the moment.
Wow. Fucking wow. You know what's a good little experiment that I would say anyone should try? Do turn your phone off for a little bit and see how many times you pick it up, touch it, and then remember that it's off. Because that'll show you how automatic it is that it's in your hands and you're touching it. Because I've done this and it's like, I'll be like, you know, pick it up and be like, oh, yeah, my phone's off. Oh, yeah. And then a second later, oh, yeah, my phone's off. And it's just like, wow. I would, yeah.
I will do the same thing with I'll either turn my data off or I'll turn on airplane mode.
Yeah.
That's another thing that I try to keep as a part of my morning routine when I'm feeling strong and able to.
Yeah.
I turn my phone on airplane mode while I do all of it, while I do my
Okay.
workout, while I do my meditation, all of that, my phone's on airplane mode. I'm not always successful. Some days I
Yeah.
can't. Some days I'm sitting and doing yoga and my phone is on the yoga mat next to me and I'm picking it up while I'm doing poses and stuff, and that's not
Right.
great. But I do try, on better days or on days where I feel I can handle that, to
Yeah.
put my phone on airplane mode. And especially like if I am at home with my children,
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
like that they're here. The only emergencies I could think of is if something were happening to them or to my partner.
Right,
My
right,
partner has other ways to get in touch with me if, God forbid, they need me.
right.
And my children are here. I can turn the phone on airplane mode and not be worried. Because that's another thing. We think we're so important. We think we're
Right.
so important that we need this device on us all the time and that we need to be able to be contacted at any moment. And
Right,
like, remember being young and not having a cell phone and just like
right.
going out. And if somebody called your house while you were out, they left a message for you.
Right.
Like,
Right. Yeah, like we're
that's
not
okay.
Batman. You don't fucking need
I
that.
remember one time, as a little bit older, saying to my father one time when I left the house, because every time I was out, I'd be called and asked to pick up
Yeah.
something,
Yeah,
pick
yeah,
up
yeah.
milk, pick up coffee, pick me up a pack of cigarettes, whatever it was. I always had to pick up something on my way home. And I remember one day I told him, I'm like, Dad, I'm out. I don't have a cell phone today. I'm out. You can, if you have something to talk to me about, we'll talk when I get home. Like, I'm out. I'm out. It's 1984 and I'm out. Like, I don't have a cell phone right now. Because that's also, I think, part of what feeds into the addiction is it kind of that self-importance that I need this device on me at all times. Because what if somebody needs me? What if somebody's trying to get in touch with me? What if somebody wants my opinion of something? Or like if a person wants me, they need to be able to access me immediately because I'm very important.
Right, it's never not important. So as a parent, I'm interested in when you think it's okay to give a child a phone. I know your son is real little, but your daughter, does your daughter have a phone? Does she have friends in her phones?
She does, but her friends who have phones are a little bit older than her.
Okay. Well, so what do you think about that?
I
Has she asked for one and you told her not yet, or does she not
she
care?
she doesn't really care. She wants it more for the like she wants it to use as like a tablet. She doesn't,
Okay.
she's not often places without me,
Right.
and I'm the primary person that she would want to contact.
Right.
And when she wants to contact other people, I let her use my phone to do so. So like she also like she'll communicate with her friends through my phone. Like I have an app where she can talk to my friends' kids and stuff like that. Okay. So she does use, quote unquote, a phone. You know, she does use that. But I don't want to introduce her to having her own.
Yeah.
Probably until she's like, until she's at an age where she's going places without me,
right,
without another adult that I know and trust and am in constant communication with. At this point, if she's not with me, she's with my sisters, she's with my mother-in-law, she's with my brother-in-law, she's with people I know and trust who can get in touch with me. Once she's at an age where she's going for, you know, she's going out to the mall with her friends or something like that, then I'm going to want her to be able to do that. But I don't think, I struggle with introducing technology.
Well, you
to
know,
her.
There may come a time earlier than that period where she'll ask for one.
Yeah.
And you've got to either acquiesce or say, no, I don't, not yet.
It's not time. Yeah, she just recently, so this was something that I kind of was resistant to. So she has an iPad that she uses for school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she does her reading on it and everything like that. And the teacher had posted some video that led her to YouTube. She watches the video and then the next suggested video came up.
Yeah.
And it's these videos with these other kids playing with their toys. Yeah. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Go play with your own toys. And then I had a moment where I realized, I was like, this is fan fiction.
Uh-huh.
Like when I was a kid, I was able, I watched this movie and I really like these characters. So I want more of them. Let me go on Tumblr and look this up and I can find fan fiction about these characters. She's watching other kids playing with toys and exploring new stories with these characters that she knows and loves. So I was immediately put off by it because I was like, here starts the technology addiction. All she wants to do is watch these videos of other kids playing with their toys. She's not.
Yeah.
But then I realized that that really, like, that was an important creative outlet for me as a kid.
Yeah.
Taking inspiration from other people, not, you know, not to rip off ideas or anything, but taking inspiration from other people who were expanding on these worlds and seeing that like, oh, that's possible.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's good to be found.
Sure.
But it's certainly hard, like trying to temper that with a child, like trying to make sure, like, you know, I don't want her to be not exposed to these things at all, because it's a part of our world and it's only going to become a more prominent part of her world. You know, it's the way it's evolving. I don't want her to know nothing about technology or how to conduct herself on public networks and stuff like that. Like, I want her to know how to handle these things.
See, I don't have any kids, but I would worry about the bullying potential, because I was bullied without the internet. And you know what? Going home and being in my room with my toys was a respite from being bullied. And I feel like these poor kids don't get that. They don't.
No.
They go home and they're still connected. And they could still be bullied mercilessly. And it just, oh God, it turns my stomach to think about it. Especially when you're so young, you don't have the cognizance to be like, fuck these people.
Yeah.
Right. You're looking for acceptance and so it's like you might. Ugh.
And with modern technology, all your worst moments, your most embarrassing moments or whatever are often documented.
Yeah.
You know, because so and so can talk about how I picked my nose, but there's no video or picture of it. But now there is. Now there's a video of you picking your nose and it's on Facebook and it will be forever.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. God. Like for me, it was when I was a kid, I got made fun of for being the nose picker, which is why I used that example.
Which, by the way, like, it's all human beings pick their fucking nose. It's a matter of how stealthy you are with it.
Yeah, we all pick our noses, for crying out loud.
Fuck yeah, of course we do.
Oh boy.
Anyway,
the shame for being a human
feel
with a body.
The documentation, because it's like,
yeah,
it could follow you forever, you know.
I think our generation has that struggle a little bit, just because social media and stuff was coming up for a lot of us when we were in like high school and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have some cringeworthy moments that I know are on photo or video that I would be absolutely mortified of.
Oh, God, yes.
Should they arise in a, you know, fashion not permit. But we don't have it.
We were at the beginning. We were born out, not in that world. Kids now are born in the fully functional digital world.
Yeah, and everything they do is documented from the time that they're born, essentially. I mean, I know I posted pictures of my kids and stuff like that.
Oh.
Like, I know not everybody does. I know, but there's so much that sets them up to already be a part of social media and to
Yeah.
have this. I don't want to say that I hesitate to say that it sets them up for an addiction to it. But it very well may.
There are places where it's worse. The most technologically advanced country is South Korea. We often think about North Korea because of the poverty and the dictatorship, but right over that militarized border, you have the most technologically advanced. And you have in South Korea rehabs for technology, phone rehabs, which
Wow.
we do not, I don't think we have yet in America,
No, I don't think
or if
so.
we do, they're a cottage industry.
Yeah.
But
Wow.
they are there. Well, there was this thing that was happening in South Korea where they would have these like places, I think they were called bang clubs. And they're basically like an arcade, but with the all the amenities of a casino. Like they pump in fresh oxygen, there's no windows, there's no clocks.
Oh,
So
wow.
they're arcades, and kids were like passing out because they weren't eating for 17 hours.
Oh my God.
And just the addiction was just at a crazy level.
Children will completely ignore their bodily needs if they are constantly stimulated. Like any parent I have ever spoken to has dealt with the child who has an accident because they don't want to go to the bathroom because they're playing. And you saying that and applying that thought to technology and how it would cause a child or a human to
Like some of these
ignore
kids were
their
like 20.
bodily needs. Yeah. I mean, I know I've ignored my bodily needs to just let me just finish this and then I'll get up and go to the bathroom, or let me just finish this and then I'll have something to eat, and then gotten caught in that loop.
I have never forgotten to eat, but I know it's a thing that some people do. And it led to them doing these rehabs where like it's like any other rehab, like you're not allowed to have your phone. I think they might give you a flip phone that you can like access for like 5 minutes a day to call your parents or whatever, but
Yeah.
they take you out in nature. It's like any other rehab.
To
And
reset.
yeah, it's crazy. And I don't play this kind of video game, but I know like people who play like open world things like World of Warcraft, that could be super addictive. I knew somebody once who he was just addicted. He lost his job and his wife threatened to leave him unless he
Yeah.
stops. So he had
Oh
to
my
stop,
God.
and now he doesn't play like any other addiction. He doesn't play anything because he doesn't
Yeah.
want to tempt himself and slip.
Those are, especially dangerous, I feel like, because it's a video game with a social aspect.
Right, and it's also there's no end to it. You could
No, and
play World of Warcraft forever.
it's an outlet where you get to create who you are too, which is that's a huge thing about online
Right, which I think
presence, I
is a
think.
good thing. I think that's a wonderful thing to experience whatever kind of body you want to experience.
For sure. For
Right.
sure. And I think that that's a blessing and a curse with social media is I think it's easy to become obsessed with the image that you project, and like curating your social media to, be a certain something. I know that I have certainly done that.
Oh, sure.
I've
We all do it to some extent.
yeah
We
we
all,
I
you don't post a picture of yourself that you're not attractive,
And
right?
it's okay to do that. It's
Right.
okay to craft your aesthetic and to want to put a certain image out there and stuff like that's a beautiful thing, because
Right.
I also have heard it spoken of, and I like to think of technology at its best as evolution. It's an extension of
Right.
consciousness.
It
It's a way to
democratizes things, and yeah.
It makes your thoughts tangible in some way. You can create certain things and whatever that are just this projection of what's going on in your head, and that's beautiful.
I feel like catfishing is wrong because if you're preying on somebody, but I sometimes feel bad for the catfisher because sometimes like you see like catfishers and it's like you are not who you want to be.
Right.
It's almost like a person going through transition. It's like when you see somebody, whatever it is, they could be catfishing as another gender, or they could be an overweight older person pretending to be a thin younger person. It's like I understand that, and there is something revolutionary about that. It's just
Yeah.
it's bad when you hurt somebody else with it.
Yeah, I actually not completely directly because I didn't p become particularly close with the person, but in one of my online communities, a catfish was exposed. And it made me angry because this person used their identity to hurt other people. But it mostly made me really sad because it was like, if you would have shared who you actually are, like this is a really beautiful community and we would have loved you as you are. And like that's I understand that. I understand feeling sorry for people who resort to that because how uncomfortable must you feel as yourself? And like to need validation and love and community, but to be so scared to put yourself out there for that you have to create a different person who you think is worthy of that love and that,
You know, there's
sad.
good and bad, and I think digital technology and interconnectedness is getting to a point where it's almost too complex for our Homo sapien brains to truly get a handle on. I recently read a book called sorry to keep changing subjects so quickly, but I re recently read a book called Your Brain on Porn, which was about young kids who have grown up with digital technology and how, like, when I was a kid, like, there were porn magazines. And like, what is there, like, nine women in there, right? Like, you can look at porn for 10 minutes online and see 1,000 fresh naked bodies.
You
And
and you
like,
can look up anything you'd like to see.
right. And what's happening is we're starting to see a huge rise of erectile dysfunction in young men, like kids, like 15-year-olds. And it's not the body. You can't give these kids Viagra and it's gonna fix it. It's the mind, because it's like,
They have unrealistic expectations of themselves and their partners.
but also they've, like, the thing they've become addicted to is the newness of it, like novelty. We're always attracted to novelty. That's what keeps us from inbreeding. That's also what keeps us going out and procreating and spreading ourselves. But if you're online and it's like, scrolling, new body, new body, new body, am I gonna come with this one? No, let me, there's gonna be a better one, blah, 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 blah. And you see 1,000 people, it's like that person may now have a hard time having a relationship.
Yeah, it doesn't give any sort of healthy bedrock for monogamy. We live in a society that, enforces monogamy in a lot of ways.
And I'm not saying you, yeah, and I'm not saying you have to be monogamous.
No. That exposure makes it hard to enjoy one partner for more than a handful of times or whatever, because you're thinking, okay, so what's next? What's next? How can I one
Truly
up
an
this
addiction.
experience?
It's truly an addiction because you're constantly seeking the novel, the new thing.
Yep, chasing the
So
dragon.
yeah, so and that's something that really happened. I mean, it could happen to anybody, but that seems to be a problem with younger people. People who grew up with high speed porn. Because even in the beginning of the internet, like, I remember, like, it would take like fucking 20 minutes to download one porn image. It would be like 40%, 50%. It's like, oh, I could kind of see a boob. Sure. Now it's like,
Pixelated, but it's there.
now on your phone. I mean, I saw a meme once that was like, I want to thank the internet for showing me more naked bodies than all of my ancestors put together have seen. And it's like, holy shit.
Seriously, and in age of technology or whatever, not only can you see the images, you can connect with women and you can connect with sex workers so easily. And I think the job that sex workers do is incredibly important. I think it's healing work. I think that people have a right to be able to explore their sexuality with a person they feel safe with. I think that it's incredibly important work, but because it's become so accessible now, I do think that it can have an adverse effect on relationships if people aren't open and honest about, what they need, from their partner or partners in their relationship. It's so easy to seek that elsewhere because of the internet.
Well, I forget who said this, and I'm sure I'm going to get most of this wrong, but hey, you don't come here for information. Some sociologists were saying, like, like, we used to, like, be in, like, packs or tribes or communities of like 100. And really, your little human pea brain can't handle more than 100 people. That's about all you can really maintain. And now you've got more than that. Your brain can't handle that.
I feel like I've heard this person speak or whatever. And just talking about like that, you're so overexposed to people, and like maybe if you were in the tribe of 100, you would be the best whatever in that
Yeah.
group. You would be the best cook or the best singer or the best painter or whatever. But now you're exposed to all the best painters from those groups of 100, and
Yeah.
now you feel inferior because of this overexposure. So it's a beautiful thing to be able to connect across
Yeah.
the entire globe and to be able to see things, you know, but it also it's very easy to feel like, oh, so I don't have a place in all of this.
Yeah. It is so complicated. It is so complicated. And you try to not, even as I get older, sometimes I have a knee-jerk reaction to a new technology or a new medium that I go, oh, that can't be good. But I try to not allow myself to do that because it is what it is. You kind of have to have no value judgment towards it and just try to maintain your own health and the health of the people around you. Because there's as much terrible, there's great. I mean, like the ability that you and I have to make this podcast and share it with the world is amazing. It's democratized the ability to publish yourself and stuff. You know, put our art out there, put our stuff out there. But it's bad when, you know, it's bad. It's
And
yeah.
as a creative person, I think it's you struggle to put yourself out there sometimes because you're like, how is this different from any of the million other things that are out there? Yeah, trillion, billion, whatever, however many things that are similar to what I say or do that are out there. But I think because of maybe in a woo-woo sense, because of those tribes or whatever, we all resonate with different people. And maybe what I say is the same exact sentiment as somebody else saying it, but the way I said it got through to this person differently.
Well, that's
Or
yeah.
the way I, yeah, any person can put you know, paint down on paper, but the way that I did it spoke to somebody. You know, that just thinking about the fact that you still have value in a world that's so oversaturated.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it because there are, there's millions of podcasts. And at the beginning of the pandemic, there was even a surge of people starting. We started this podcast during the pandemic. So sometimes I think about, God, there are so many podcasts. Does our podcast, I know our podcast reaches people, but does it fucking matter at all? But what you just said, I think, is really an important thing for me to think about because I'm sure there are other podcasts like this that are reaching people. But it's our we're not we you know what? We're not using our voices for anything bad, I don't think.
I don't think so, no. And I think
If we were
that
white supremacists making a white supremacist podcast, then I'd say, oh, see, here's a problem.
so this is not great. But it's, I think, you know, it's your voice is a creator, and your voice, even physically, the sound of your voice is going to appeal to different people. You know, some people are going to feel irritated by another thing that someone feels comforted by, or, you know, it's all about putting something out into this digital world or whatever that reflects you so that other people can be drawn to that genuine part of yourself. For me, that's what it's about, is finding that connection. And that for sure can be addictive, especially when you're trying so hard to establish that connection and sometimes you don't feel it, and you're trying to create this group or this family of people, or you know, to find your corner of the internet. You know, it can be that hunt can be addictive.
And if you listen to this podcast, thank you so much. We couldn't do it without you, and we love doing it.
We appreciate you so deeply.
Cuckoo Bananas is available anywhere podcasts are found, and you can follow us at Cuckoo Bananas on Instagram. Kate, I think we did it.
Think we
I think
did
we
it.
solved the problem.
That's it.
It's over.
It's over. I'm gonna throw my phone in the river.
Yes. All right, I'll see you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.